Another day for the Esoteric Logical Show here. It's Issa Logic and it's Patricia Cleveland coming to you from this wonderful, wonderful globe that we live on. Oh, I've just had a terrible, terrible time. I was just discussing it with a friend that I don't know whether there's a resonant shift going on the planet in the last 24 hours or if it's a solar flare. I don't know, but there is some things moving out there that are going to bring some transitions into a lot of people's lives. And because that energy is blocked right now and our little spinning gyro compasses inside our hearts are just kind of going, oh, there was a surge of something go through. I think that we're going to just have to learn to stay still and adapt and not take this energy on right now. Just become like particles of sand. And let it just move right on through us and not stick. And we'll just have a great day. Well, I have got absolutely an amazing show not figured out. So we're just going to go with the flow today. I've been enjoying all of the connections made through having this wonderful show. And I just have had some really cool connections with people all over the world. A big hi to Cecilia and to Mimi and to Renee and Christian and Honey and Frank and Bob and Peggy. Thank you, everyone, for all of your really, really wonderful feedback. It's hard to understand where people's interests lie because talking about the esoteric or the hidden knowledge that is channeled through our animals and through our environment is such a wide and diverse subject that we could go on for hours. I could talk to you about the standing wave of energy that I see and perceive as being found in every cell of everything that forms a material planet that we have said this is solid and we're walking on. I could talk to you about the influence of color and how color brings in emotion, and that emotion helps us to define and discharge places of blocked energy. I can talk to you about the emotional state of who we are and why it's there and how come it's there and what's driving it. I can also relate to you that we may perceive ourselves as being one singular energetic being, that we may be corded to the earth, and we may be corded to the stars. But I think in really looking around, that we're seeing things as separate and not so much as whole. And when we see things as separate, it's isolated, or it's specialized, like that special person. She's so special. She gets everything she wants, she desires. People see her as special. Is she the chosen one? Well, in her reality, she may not be the chosen one. She may be looking out at everybody else going, hey, I think I'm special today, but without everybody else around me, who's going to see who I am? And who's going to recognize why I'm so special? And I think sometimes in the energy world, whether you're a healer or you're just a person that's going, hey, I am here and I'm self-aware, I think that we tend to isolate and specialize and forget that without the other things in our environment, would we actually exist? It's kind of like that Buddhist saying, if there's a tree in the forest and no one is there and that tree falls, Does it actually make a sound? Does it leave an imprint? Well, in the sound world, in the world of having somebody actually listen to the tree fall, and if you weren't there and you didn't hear the tree fall, then no, it wouldn't leave an imprint. And when you're special and you don't understand the relationship of your specialness with all the things around you, it's not going to pay attention, because you're going to become so special that you're going to disconnect. And when you disconnect, your world changes. And maybe it's a place for you to go. But when you disconnect, you actually leave a hole, a pocket. And when that pocket forms, there's sometimes energy that moves in that really shouldn't be living there. And so, just like your body, when you have a state of disease, I think there's a rampant state of disease that's going on in the energy field that is defined as the earth, is defined as the ecosystem that we interact in, can be defined as our agricultural system or our political system, or, gee whiz, kind of funny actually, thinking about the financial system. Out there somewhere, there's an imbalance. And that imbalance has cascaded all the way down into our understanding of what is real. And I don't know whether it is our job to hold the state of balance, or it is our job to let the imbalance move through us and go on into the next layer of energy and life. But what I do know is, without balance in the realm that we live in, this physical world called Earth, without balance, the human animal, the energetic animal, the psyche, becomes a really destructive thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why I am so thankful for having the ability to have animals in my life. They perform a really amazing service, and I don't think a lot of people really realize it. Now, we talk about in energetics vampirism, and how the human exchange between one another can create energy drains or energy balancing. And when you come into a relationship and you walk away from it and you feel like your feet aren't hitting the ground anymore, did you just benefit from somebody else's stuff? Did you just feed on that person? Or did they give their energy to you? Or was the energetic exchange so completely in harmony that you both walk away in a state of purity and joy? Well, when we interact with animals, do we consider that reaction? Does the animal give itself to you in a state of joy? And when it's finished interacting with you, does it go and lay down and fall asleep? Do you come away from that interaction going, oh yeah, that was a good dog. I love my cat. They're so lovely. And you feel up and complete and de-stressed? Did you just do a vampiristic act? Did you just steal some of the emotional charge off your animal to keep yourself whole and balanced? Well, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because I believe that everything has a purpose in life. And maybe that's one of the purposes that animals perform for us. Because you see, they have a stronger ability to ground themselves. And their energy grid is wired a lot different than who we are. Because you see, somehow, I don't know how we ended up being such a complicated thing, but we're vertical. Our energy drives vertical. And occasionally it radiates out horizontally. And when it does, That's how we connect. It's how we connect to all the energetic fields around us, whether it's the tree or the door or the radio. It's how we sense the things in our world. But our spiritual cord, our Ahara line, which is the big corridor, the power surge, the main trunk line of energy that goes through our body from the earth to the stars, to the center of the universe, to the higher place of being, to the I am, that cord runs vertical. But in animals, it runs a different way. So I think animals are able to balance the spin, the uncertainty, the inability to sometimes fit back down into the soul of who we are. You see, the animal's line runs horizontal. The Hara line, that center core trunk of energy of your animal, runs vertical. Or sorry, horizontal. See, I'm dyslexic, calexic, and ambidextrous all in the same word. I don't know which ends up sideways or anyway, spinning. But an animal's power grid is different than the human's. The Hara line, the center cord, runs from the sunrise to the sunset. And if you ever get a chance to be outside, and it doesn't matter whether you're in the city or you're out in the country, or you go hiking, and you're out at just before the sun breaks the edge of the earth, and you'll hear animals rustling around in the woods. You may hear a bird sing before the break of day. You'll watch the herds of cattle. You may watch your dogs. Sometimes they play, but I will guarantee you that everything that is on four legs will stand still. It's like a state of meditation, a prayer, a moment to recognize who they are. At sunrise, all the animals stand still. It's not like somebody says, hey, everybody stand still now. It's the power grid, the energy field. It hits a circuit and it reconnects the animal. It reconnects the animal to the power of the sun, the thing that charges their battery every day. They stand still. They close their eyes. And they fall deep inside who they are. And they hold a presence there. And within communities of animals, now I've seen this happen with herds of horses. They become statues. It's kind of like soft images cut in the mist of stone. They don't move. They don't blink an eye. They don't swish a tail. There's just stillness. And they'll be there for, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And standing still for any animal is one of the most difficult things to do. It's unnatural, really, when you think how much movement they do in a day. But for 15 minutes, at the break of the sun, the birds are silent. The wind is still. The fog settles lightly on everything that doesn't move. And the water particles merge and help to bring in the harmonic charges that are taken in through the pores of the skin. And as the sun comes up over the edge of the earth, the breath is heard once more. The grass will rustle with the imprint of the day's new voice, and the animals will breathe and blink and their ears will fill in with the new sounds of a fresh day. The vertical corridor of man doesn't seem to have that link. It's hard for us to stand still and honor the sun. When humans tend to honor the sun is at high noon. We who work outside every day feel the beating, the radiation, the warming sensation. And at noon, we stand and we honor the sun. Now, it's a subconscious honoring of the sun. It's like our body is on automatic drive. We may take in food. We will stop what we are doing. And even if it's for 5 minutes and we don't have the ability to stand still, but we will stop what we are doing, the conversation may change. And at high noon, our hara lines connect to the core of the sun. And when that happens, we are grounded all the way through to the core of the earth. So there's a difference in how energy moves between a human and an animal. And sometimes I wonder about trees. I find them so totally amazing because you see they're vertical. But a tree stands still at the rise of the sun. And a tree will stand still in the middle of the day. And a tree will stand still at the edge of night as the animals come in to find a place to stay in the dark. So, are we part tree? Are we part animal? Really, when you start looking at energy corridors and grids, where do we fit into all of this? So, people love their animals. And I think the animal is in your life for a really great reason. It's there to help you ground in an environment that we really don't really resonate all that well with anymore because we haven't got the ability to stand still. It's hard. It's hard for animals to stand still and honor the sun. It's hard for those who go and worship to stand still. It is hard to hold your mind still. But when you sit on a couch and you stroke the back of a cat, or you're outside playing with your dog and the two of you collapse on the ground in total joy and fatigue, in that moment, I think there's a connection. The connection between man and beast, man and the thing that he may love, the thing that helps him understand really who and what we are. We have the origins of the earth locked inside of us, and we have to be brought down every once in a while. And that's the role of your cat. That's the role of your dog. And for those who hold spiders and snakes, that is the role that they do for you. The intuitive value of these animals fill up our minds with ideas, and they give us the sensations that maybe we have forgotten, the things that actually are resonated in our past lives, our cellular memory, the things that teach us that, hey, you can survive. You have the ability to think. You have the ability to adapt and evolve. You have the ability to shed your skin and become something new. Not to be afraid of being human. Because inside the human, there is the essence of the snake, the dog, the horse, the cat, the tree, the bird, and the wonderful little organisms that actually live and grow to form our bodies and the communities that create our minds and help us to generate the thought. Now, I think it's time to take a breath. When I come back, I'm going to see if I can help you understand what it is like to interact with a horse. So stay tuned. We'll be back soon.
Hey, I just met you.
I love that song. It just makes me so happy inside. I don't know whether it's me being a young girl again or what, but it keeps me up and happy and going. Oh, so a lot of you have animals and you really want to know what to do with them. Well, the first thing is to learn how to connect, because there's an interaction that goes on that I think is a two-way street. We interact and we give them our love. Now, love, we need to qualify that. Is it love because we gave them food and food represents love? Or is it the fact that we lay our hand on their energy field and we connect with the heart chakra? And instead of taking their energy or giving our energy, we just stay neutral. You'd be amazed at how many animals do not understand that they have the right to accept neutral love. When you go to neutral love, I think it's a stronger relationship. You see, I worked with dogs, mostly blue heelers, who I think are actually more like a hybrid wolf. They don't think like a Maltese or a poodle. They think more like a wild pack animal that's ready to work with you and be like 2 days ahead of where you are. And those animals I can't and will not put into a state of controlled love. I ask them to be part of a pack, part of a society, and to become part of this interaction. And I know I'm a different species from them, but we work together as a team. And I don't have dog treats in my pocket. And I don't have a whistle or a bell. And the last thing I will do is put a leash on my dog. Now, I'm lucky. Our animals have about, almost 60 acres to work. And they get to run and play and do a lot of stuff. But the bottom line is that they respect me for who I am. Not what I give them, or the fact I take them for truck rides, which I actually do. I kind of spoil them. Once upon a time, there was a car advertisement that said dogs love trucks. Well, blue heelers love trucks. They go down the side of the road, and they actually count how many cows are in every farmer's field. But I'm getting away from where I want to go. The point I wanted to make is that there's different types of connections to different types of fields. And the dog works in my field because he feels an instinctive connection to the swirling vortex, the being of who I am. And my vortex has connected with that animal's vortex. And it's not a conscious thought thing. It's not,
I am the human, you must do as I say, you'll vote.
No, it's not that. It's like, we have a common goal here to safeguard, say, making sure the goats, which we have about 82 of them, okay, to make sure the goats come in from the pastures. And once the animals understand their role, I'm able to let the dog do his job because he knows he's helping me. And if he helps me, my emotional stress level is less. And you see, just like the sunshine at the brink of the day, animals need and honor things that are still. So I learned from the animals that to connect and to be still is the benefit. It's the comfort zone. It's not the artificial stuff. It's not the artificial love. It's taking that animal back to its very essence, right back to the place that we could call I am, that still point where there is no time and there is no movement. Now that's like not here in this present physical conscious place that we interact in, but in our emotional center, in our heart, we can create that. And so when I work with animals, I don't work with a lot of conscious thought. I'm actually moving through neutral. I'm moving through the center of my heart. So when I work with the dog, I'm emotionally still. And that's the blessing that he is so happy to receive. Now, he may be bouncing up and down with joy, but that's his expression of what do I do with all this physical energy. But on a soul-to-soul level, that dog honors me because I don't have to yell and scream and have expectations of him following every command. And I understand that they think on a different level and they go to a different place and they see things that I will never know. And so I have to honor the animal for the knowledge that he will share. And the same thing happens when I ride a horse. Now, I have to tell you a little bit about myself and horses because I think on the first show I spoke about how technically trained I am. I actually grew up riding horses and had this wonderful person who, she was from Australia, and Sue went to France and learned how to ride in France. And she came over to our city, our place, which is just north of Toronto, Ontario. It's a small place called Peterborough. And I was one of those horse-addicted kids. I'm sure my parents used to curse me quietly in their back room. But anyway, everything to me was horse. And without encountering this lady, I wouldn't have had the opportunities to ride horses without bridles. And to understand that you can't make an animal do something. You have to work with them. And so she taught me a lot about classical riding and dressage. And the other thing I was able to do was I met a gentleman that Walt Disney made a movie about. I think it's called, I'm not sure what the movie's name. His name was Colonel Podowski. And he came from the Spanish Riding School. And he is a very, very wonderful image in history. He was the man that moved all the Spanish riding school horses, your Lipizzan stallions, and herds of mares out of Austria and down into through France and into Spain so that the German army wouldn't have the possession of these horses. And I actually got to meet him. And from there, my riding adventures took me over to Europe. And so I ride, or used to ride, in a sport called three-day eventing, which means that I have to be very proficient in an Olympic sport called dressage, riding over jumps, like you will see at a horse jumping show, to also be able to do similar to steeplechase racing, which you'll see in England, to be able to ride long distance, and then to be able to fit a horse up, shorten my stirrups, put my boots on, my back pad, safety pad, my helmet, my gloves, and to hop on a horse and gallop across country, hill and dale, through streams, rocks, around trees, over jumps. Some of these jumps will vary anywhere between, 3 feet to up to 4 feet. And in three-day eventing, these jumps don't fall down. I mean, these are solid. If you hit them, not a good day. And to do that, it puts you in a different space. Now, at horse shows, at three-day event competitions, you hear all the professional trainers, and they're telling their students, well, do this, do that, shorten the horse up, push the horse forward, he's not paying attention to you, all of these things. And I would go to these events, and I wouldn't have a trainer. And I didn't have a lot of money, so, geez, I didn't have the best horse. But I would have a horse, and I would put my time and effort into not making the horse do things, but to inviting the horse to be with me and see what we could achieve together. And it's a different feeling rather than the technical riding that you see and hear about in the show rings or at the Olympics. Those horses are in partnership with the rider, but it's an artificial partnership. And it's not a heart-to-heart connection. Now, you will find athletes that are in the horse world, and they will have a great career, and it will be only a short window of time because that person has found a horse that isn't the make-it-happen horse. It's the heartfelt connection of partnership. So that's part of the drive for people who are energetic to be around horses. It's a different type of relationship. And so, just to give you an idea what it may feel, take a deep breath and fall in. Close your eyes if you're in the environment where you can. And think about smelling sweet honey and toast. And bring it in and let it merge with the feelings of who you are. And then let's take the sound and pull it down into your heart. And now, this is for me what it's like to ride a horse. Tighten my stirrups up, make them short. Make sure the girth that holds the saddle on is nice and tight. Flex my boots to make sure my heels and ankles are nice and loose. And I pop up on his back. I pick up the reins as I stroke his neck. And he'll turn his head so I can see his eye. I have permission to touch his mouth. And so I will gently take my fingers and hold the reins as if they are the wings of the butterfly. Now my weight, I'm not small, but my weight I will pretend is a feather that rests along the curve at the base of the neck of the horse. And I'll breathe in, and I will feel the rhythm of his breath. And the next thing I will pull in is all that noise in my head. And I will run this noise down the back and into the chakra of my heart. And I will shut it off like a switch. There's now no noise, no voice in my head. I take a deep breath and anchor my heart and my hara and my grounding cord through the cellular essence of the horse. And I will squeeze him and breathe in, and my hip will push forward. And his stride will start to bring back the memory, the rhythms of the essence of who I am. The comforting rocking of being in my mother's arms. The rocking of being in a boat. The comfort of being in an old chair. And he will pull me across the land as one on top of his back. And as I ask with my thought, my angles of my body and my breath, We will move forward and faster, like changing gears, and as we go, I will tip my body forward. And as he surges underneath, I feel the strength of his being, and it rushes up and fills every soul-filled cell of the essence of who I am. And as we gallop up the hill and over to see the jumps that come to us as challenges, not as one and one to be two, but just as one. And the thoughts push us forward. And my hara line now bends, and my heart chakra merges with the powerful heart of the horse. His heart can race up to 250 beats per minute, while I struggle to keep my breath pumping for about 150 beats per minute. So he is 100 times more powerful than I am. And the energy vortex that he moves and pumps through the length of his body fills upwards into the soul of who I am. And with every breath, we set a rhythm and a pace. And now I have the choice to think or just be. Do I trust or do I not? And with the partnership comes a sense of being one. The breath, the rhythm, the pulse, the adrenaline, and that moment where his feet lift me up off the ground, and it's like I have wings for that moment, that split second, that breath of who I am. We're flying together in space, still, hovering, waiting for the ground. And maybe if I'm lucky, we will never land. Oh, take a breath. That's what it feels like to ride 3-day event over fences. It goes on for, maybe 15 or 20 minutes like that. One fence after another, covered and surrounded by everything that is green. You stop hearing the noise or the rush of the wind. And actually, sometimes it's like a meditated state. You're just there, slow motion, going across the fields, enjoying your day. No stress, no have-tos. It's just be. And if something goes wrong, it happens. Don't worry about it. Don't project it. Don't bring it forward. Just live in that very essence of now, being connected to everything that is. Oh, take a breath. I think it's time for another break. And come on back and see me. I'll be here.
It can happen to you. It can happen to me. It can happen to everyone eventually.
Well, I hope understanding a little bit about how it feels like to fly with 4 feet underneath you will help you to understand that it's not so much the doing, but the experiencing, and not the motion of actually being big and strong and powerful, but that little moment where absolutely everything freezes and you make a connection. To me, that is the feeling of love, not the radiant power of light and being, but that place of being still. And I think that stillness is something that animals value more than all the love that we radiate and we give to them. Because when we actually radiate into their field, it's like a push. So if you want to ask them to come towards you, then maybe that's a different experience for both of you. And if you can just stay still without emotion and just be in their presence and let them get comfortable with the fact that you're still. They may reveal the essence of the connection between man and animal. Now, for those of you who are curious about horses, they have been in our history for a very, very long time. Matter of fact, the oldest known religious belief system, which is found in the Dogon societies in Africa, they worshipped a blue god who was actually fish-like that came out of the sea. And these beings would come up and they gave the wisdom of knowing, knowledge, to the Dogon people. Now, this is in Africa, a gazillion years ago. I don't know the exact age. And if you're interested, there's some pretty amazing books out there on the Dogon religion. But the curious thing that I have found, because I tend to be of the tribe of the horse, is that the powerful symbol for the Dogon people's god, one of the representation for God, is the Dogon's sign for the horse. And in the holy and the sacred relics of the Dogon people, there is a bowl with four horses at the base, and there is a box that's held up on four horses, one in each corner. So the connection may be the essence of the horse in man's history, in man's ancient wisdom, holds more than what we actually are bringing into value today. Just to illustrate some of the benefits of being around a horse, there was a study done by a magazine called an association called Society and Animals. And this was just recently published in the September issue of the Prevention magazine, that they have been doing therapy with people and horses. And not, you know, just you get on the horse and you do exercises for people who are physically challenged or emotionally challenged, but just to spend time with horses and interact. It has been scientifically documented that your stress levels dramatically reduce. And when we have people come and visit us here at the farm, we can watch their stress levels. They may be engineers or lawyers or psychologists, but they will come in and you can actually feel their emotional charge as they come in to say hello. And they'll come up and I'll take them out to the field where I have horses who are not brought into barns or fed special food or given vaccinations or all the traditional things that we do with horses. These horses are natural and they work as a society within themselves. But they've learned that it's okay to be around people because sometimes we like to be still and they honor that essence inside of us. And so I'll take people out to the field and they will just stand there terrified as a herd of like 10 to 15 horses comes over the rise of the hill and thunders down towards us to say, "Hey, it's so nice to see you." And some of them will be bucking and rearing and dancing off the ground because, you know, they have to show us the beauty and the grace that their bodies are designed to display. And they'll come in and, you know, a horse is not going to run over top of you if you're in your present. And so I put an energy field of being in the present around the people who aren't sure what to do. And so all of a sudden, it's like you're mobbed. Like being a rock star, being surrounded by the crowd. And you have all these horses come in and they aren't aggressive. They'll stand back and they will wait for you to say your first breath. And when you do that, the horse can feel that rush of your energy the discharge from your heart. And then they will stand still and sniff and smell. And if you mentally and emotionally say it's okay to be touched, they'll move in, and they're kind of like hoovers. They're sniffing you. They're touching your skin. They may look at you. I had a lady come out in sandals, and if you ever want to freak your animal out, if they've never seen you without shoes, take your shoes and socks off and show them your toes. It's an amazing thing for them to see. But the therapeutic value of coming out and interacting with a horse discharges the negative emotional, the stress, the concern, and it will last and have an imprint in who you are for up to 6 months. An hour with a horse will help balance who you are for up to 6 months. That's a pretty powerful thing. But, you know, not everybody can have a horse. So we have dogs and we have cats. We may have other animals, a gerbil, a bird. They all are there to help us ground. Because you see, animals have been pets of humans for centuries. And they play an important role. And society doesn't want us to see that role. Right now, there's a lot of really negative stuff going on to try and strip animals out of our lives and to disconnect us from the earth. But the cat has also walked hand in hand in the history of man. And the essence of the cat is much different than the horse. To me, they vibrate like they don't even belong here. They're from the stars or the heaven. They have a different essence about them. And sometimes I get to are asked to help cats. And for me, it's a different experience because they resonate with a different value. And I'm so used to talking with horses and being around farm animals that to be in the presence of the cat means that I have to make a shift. And to do that, I still have to go to neutral. No feeling, no emotion in my heart. And when I'm able to do that, I'm able to mirror the energy, the harmonic frequency of the cat. I can speed up the energy that springs up and down inside my body. I can control that so it's not uncomfortable for the cat, and it's not uncomfortable for me. I got a few minutes here, so I'm going to tell you the story about going and working on a wildcat. I went up to this farm, and very, very lovely people with a huge house, must have had like 49 rooms, and I was asked if I would please, please come and help this cat. They had trapped it. It was wild. It had been outside and obviously been hit by a car. And they had taken it upstairs and put it in a guest room. And it was a lovely room. I mean, beautiful European broadloom and tiled bathroom and skylights and plants and a double bed. And it was lovely, lovely. Everything was beautiful. And in this room was a cat that had never, ever been touched by man. And he was walking sideways. Something had hit him really hard and half put his energy being out of his body. And he was almost paralyzed from his neck through his right shoulder. And his back was really twisted. And he was wild. You weren't touching this cat. So I didn't know quite what to do. And Cheryl, the lady who had asked me to come, was a really great cat person. And she says, well, I've been feeding him, and he won't let us touch him, but could you help him? I'm sitting there thinking in the physical context, oh, how am I going to help a cat that I can't even touch? So I opened up myself, and I just asked to be guided. There's no plan here involved. I mean, when you start doing, say, chiropractics on a cat and you study it and you're like really formally trained, the book on how to chiropractically adjust your cat must be like about 400 pages thick. Because the one on adjusting a dog is maybe 32 pages thick. And the one for adjusting a horse is maybe 10 pages thick. The one for adjusting a cat is so thick because it talks about how you're supposed to restrain the cat in such a way that the assistant who may hold the cat isn't going to get hurt. So we're not going to do this because this is an animal that's wild, has never been touched. So what I did was I sat on the floor and I asked Cheryl to sit facing me. And I spread my legs with my shoes off, and I asked Cheryl to spread her legs, and we put the soles of our feet together, so we created a diamond. And I asked her if we could just please meditate and be still. And this is what we did. And I would say within 5 to 10 minutes, this cat came out from under the towels in the bathroom, and I kid you not, he walked right over, and he sat in the middle of the diamond that Cheryl and I had created. And there, he kind of threw pictures at me, and I was trying to ask him how I can help him. And he sprang out of this diamond, and we'd made this field, and he just jumped up on the bed. Now, I had my back up against the bed, and so my shoulders were at the height of the mattress, and the cat goes on the bed, and I'm sitting there trying to hold my space and stay in neutral and work from my heart chakra and just feel what the message from this cat would be. And before I know it, he's laying on the bed directly behind my head, and I can feel these dainty little baby touches on the back of my neck. And the next thing you know, they move in and they're touching me stronger and stronger. And he didn't take his claws out. He just used the pads of his feet. And he gave me this little gentle massage. And as he's doing this, a chill goes up my spine and into my mind. And I get all these pictures. And I've never had a sensation like this ever before. This cat touched my soul. And as he was doing this, I thanked him for his pictures. And I took and made an image in my mind of his body. And I pulled it and his energy together. And in my mind, I used my energy hands, and I asked the bones of his body and the muscles of who he is to please let go of the trauma of being hit by this car. And it took a few minutes, and the next thing you know, he jumps right back down into the diamond shape we had made with our legs and feet, and he laid down. And he purred. And I understood I had done a good thing. And after it was all finished, Cheryl and I broke the connection, and the cat stayed in the center of the diamond, like he had found his grounding point in which to heal. And I went home from that session, not sure whether I had done a good thing or not. And 3 days later, Cheryl had told me that the cat was no longer paralyzed and that she had been able to let him go back out and hunt in the fields and the forests around her barn. So you don't have to know what to do. You just have to trust in who you are. And the guidance that is yours, it's locked inside. You just trust your heart. Find a way to be still and love everything and everybody around you. Well, I guess it's that time. I'm looking at the clock. This is Patricia Cleveland saying, hey, love yourself. Hold yourself still. Make room for the world to move in and make life better for you. Bye. You can feed the soul apart. You